This episode could be scary for some people, and vets, and perhaps fun for others. Today we are going to talk about equine Lyme disease. For a lot of people, equine Lyme disease is a new thing in horses, and this is scary because we don't know what to do about it. Vets and clients can both be scared by that. But for vets, it could be fun. A new disease to battle, and the chance to put our abilities to the test to see if we can beat this disease and save your animal. But that involves a lot of educated guesswork and studies, and when it's your animal on the line, that's scary. Lyme disease has been around for a while, but in the horse world, this threat is rather novel. So today we're going to talk about where I currently am battling this disease. Don't think all the answers are right, and don't think my answers won't change as I get new information. But perhaps you can see where we have come with the disease and what we may do to fight it. If you will, then let's dive into the known and unknown for a discussion on this disease. What is Lyme disease? It's specifically Borrelia burgdorferi, a gram-negative spirochete bacteria. Oh, those pesky spirochetes. They just always complicate things and have to be different. But at the very minimum, Borrelia cannot survive outside the host. So we have that going for us. It is transmitted by the Ioxides species of tick. Here's where Borrelia gets pesky. It wants to survive. It is actively trying to survive by influencing its environment. That environment is a tick, and it makes the tick stronger through a variety of methods so that the ticks can actually live longer when infected by Borrelia. If the ticks live longer, they have more of a chance of passing on the Borrelia. So normal, non-infected, Lyme-carrying Ioxides ticks die easier, and the ones that are carrying the more deadly disease live longer. Doesn't that just help you sleep better at night? So my first experience with Lyme disease was a horse that did not have Lyme disease. The owner thought it did and was wanting to treat it a specific way. I chuckled seeing how the owner had arrived at the answer because it's exactly how many of my vet students arrived at answers. Answers that were wrong because they weren't seeing the big picture. I did test for the disease and it was negative. The owner stopped using me as a veterinarian because she interpreted my chuckles as an insult versus comparing the owner to my students who I enjoy teaching. I thought it a compliment that a layperson was on the same level as a fourth year vet student. Guess that didn't work out for me. Lyme disease at that time was not prevalent in my area. Fast forward a few years and that has changed drastically. Warming climates and tick populations changing were affecting the distribution of the disease. Previously, even when I diagnosed dogs with Lyme disease, I knew the animals had traveled because distribution maps showed Lyme disease only in a small area in southern Kentucky. A little over a decade later, and Lyme disease covers the state. Not only did I see an uptick in dog cases, but I started seeing Lyme in horses. Uh-oh, what do we do?
Hurry, Doc, grab the preventatives!
Yes, let's put these animals on preventatives. Oh, wait, we don't have any. Lyme disease does take 24 to 48 hours to transmit. It does not start moving out of the tick's gut until the adult female starts feeding. So a preventative would work perfect. It does in dogs. We can kill the ticks before they transmit disease. But we have no preventatives in horses, and when I talk to drug companies, they don't seem to be too interested in making any. I have seen some over-the-counter products that say they prevent ticks in horses, cows, sheep, goats, and maybe iguanas, probably everything under the sun. I am hesitant to recommend those both for wondering how effective they are and wondering how safe they are when it is labeled for literally everything. Some vets I have heard are putting some dog products on horses. That being said, I haven't found anything I feel safe putting on my horse. If I won't put it on my horse. I won't recommend it for your horse. Well, since we can prevent Lyme disease, I'm sure there are obvious clinical signs where we can notice it in the horse so that the owners can call the vet right away when they notice an infection. Yeah, well, this is another aspect of those things in life that isn't simple or easy. The more I diagnosed and treated Lyme disease, I realized it could do just about anything. The most severe presentation is neuroborreliosis. That's flu-like and neurologic symptoms that sometimes present with ataxia, paresis, weight loss, spinous muscle atrophy, narcolepsy, hyperesthesia, fasciculations, neck and back stiffness with pain, and cranial nervous deficit. Did I sound enough like a commercial there? I have never seen this bad of a case of Lyme in a horse, but I have seen them stumble and have some mild symptoms like pretty much all of those that I listed above. Another one I was really interested in took a while to piece together. The horse had a shifting leg lameness, but started being very sensitive on days when it snowed. He wanted to stay in the barn. It was months later we diagnosed Lyme disease and realized this aversion to snow was a uveitis. It was so bright it hurt his inflamed eyes. You can also see cutaneous pseudolymphoma, which is a fancy way of saying we see a nodular reaction close to a tick bite. We can see nuchal bursitis or stiffness, behavior changes, shifting leg lameness or an intermittent lameness, which is more what I see. And Borrelia loves going to synovial membranes, so any joint it can hit. We also can see muscle wasting. Gosh, is that enough? Well, there's more, but at the last conference I attended where they were talking about it, specialists were just theorizing about the other things that people think could be associated with Lyme disease. A lot of that had to do with pain in the neck region because it can cause swelling of the joints near where all the nerves of the neck are coming out from the spinal cord. One thing they did say it does not do is it does not cause laminitis. So, yay.
I guess now we just test every horse out there for Lyme disease, right, Doc?
No, not yet.
Oh no, you mean testing is a trap.
I will only test if there are clinical signs. I don't recommend testing every horse for this disease. Thankfully, many horses are exposed and fight this disease off. I am more aggressive in dogs right now, testing those with signs and on dogs' annual heartworm exams since it's part of my combo test. I'm not yet doing that in horses. I will basically only test in horses that make me concerned about having it. 40 to 50% of horses are exposed, so I will see a lot of horses potentially come back with positives even though they aren't having problems and don't have the disease. So you will bring a horse to me with some signs and I will recommend testing. What kind of test do I use? I just mentioned I have a test for dogs. I had people near me using the dog test, and from the research I did and experts I talked to, these tests just aren't that trustworthy in horses.
It is a trap.
Yes, it is. The dog test just tests for OSPA, or outer surface protein A, which for the horses will disappear quickly, leading to false negatives. I like the multiplex test, which gives you levels of different outer surface proteins. This helps us know if the horse was vaccinated, exposed, and if it's improving when we run multiple tests. So we have signs, and my multiplex test tells me we are positive. Lets me know if it's a chronic positive or an acute positive, just tons of information. I then institute treatment. You may have listened to my dog Lyme disease lecture where I pretty much treat every dog that comes back positive.
Dog. This seems odd. Shouldn't you treat every horse, or not every dog?
So in horses, one of the reasons I don't want to test every horse is because we see positives, and I may be tempted to treat every horse, which every horse doesn't need treatment. And I do not want to encourage antibiotic resistance. Also, the same as another disease, EPM, exposure isn't always showing active infection. so I don't think every horse needs treatment without clinical signs. That's why I don't run EPM tests on every horse. Dogs I started treating this same way, only if there were clinical signs, because some dogs seem to clear the infection fine. Again, I only saw this in dogs that traveled, and then may have traveled months ago, and either the disease was gone, or they weren't showing the signs like I mentioned. Sadly, my logic for treating every dog changed based on a few factors. First, clients. I've had multiple instances where owners report later, after we did not treat, that they noticed their dog had signs. I am also not sure that all the signs were being reported. Lethargy or a small fever from the dog, and maybe the dog just being a little more tired for a day or two, maybe the owner missed that because they were tired or they were at work. I am afraid with dogs that there are clinical signs going unnoticed in the dogs, so I don't want to not treat a dog because something is missed. Also, the testing we have available. As far as I know, doesn't give us the different levels of infection, acute versus chronic, in a dog, more a positive or a negative. So considering all that, I started treating dogs when they get a positive. Horses, I wait for clinical signs. Also, with pets, I am more aggressive with treatment. Remember, our livestock or horses are more exposed to the world than Fluffy, living in the house. The closer to nature an animal is, its immune system is more stimulated and responds differently. While both dogs and horses can fight off this disease, I think horses might be set up more to fight the disease off. This is something I definitely want more information on, because this is a guess. But right now, I'm suspecting that more horses can fight off this disease with it not being a problem than dogs, so I'm being less aggressive on treatment. So how are we going to treat this? I've been using tetracyclines to good effect. I use doxycycline, but there are recommendations of minocycline. I stay away from that one because my pharmacy can more easily compound doxycycline into a powder, which is easy to administer to horses. In dogs, I'm seeing two doses of Convenia have been effective to clear Lyme disease, and I use the same with Ceftiofur in horses. That, so far, is my second line of defense after tetracyclines. I use that for horses that are in a more severe state and need quicker effects than long-term doxycycline. Because with doxycycline, I treat for 2 months. So if I have a sick horse, I will give the Ceftiofur and see how we respond, because it should work faster. If I have a really, really sick horse, I may try IV tetracyclines, but that would be my last choice after Ceftiofur. 3 months after treatment is complete, I like retesting, and based off the results of the multiplex test, saying we are cured or we need to do another round of treatment.
Doc, there has to be a way of preventing this, right?
Well, sort of. We do have vaccines, so we can vaccinate to prevent Lyme disease in horses. Except there are no vaccines for horses.
Doc, quit messing with me. You just said we had the vaccines.
We do, but they are dog vaccines. I was hesitant to use them at first, but I am using them. It's off-label, but there have been studies done that show it is giving some effective antibody response in horses. Except they don't last that long. You must vaccinate twice a year to provide protection. I have used both Merck and BI vaccines for canine Lyme disease and not seen any ill effects in horses. I tend to lean toward the Merck vaccine as they were able to show me how long the vaccines worked for. I recommend vaccinating in the spring and the fall. A study from 2018 found the most ticks were collected off pets in October and November, so planning fall vaccines in September is a good time. I've gone back and forth, but at the moment I am not recommending vaccinating the entire herd. There is suspicion that some horses are more easily susceptible to Lyme disease, so any that I test and have positive, I recommend vaccinating twice a year. Otherwise, I won't stop someone from vaccinating any horses, especially horses that travel or are performance horses, but financially speaking, I'd push for other equine vaccines for protection versus vaccinating for Lyme disease in non-diagnosed Lyme cases. So if your horse has had Lyme disease once, I recommend the vaccine. If your horse is immunocompromised or have Cushing's disease, I recommend vaccinating. If it'll help you sleep at night, we can get the vaccine. If you are traveling and performing with your horse in tick-infested areas, I'm okay vaccinating. But in general, I'm not recommending it as a core vaccine for every horse. What does that mean? If your horse travels and is just in a show ring, probably not an issue. Heavy trail riders and endurance riders, I am recommending vaccinating. But since so many horses may be exposed and be fine, I'm not pushing every horse in the field being vaccinated yet, even though the field is where they will be most exposed.
Where are we now, Doc? I'm kind of confused.
That's exactly what the tick wants. So I guess it's succeeding. Well, we know what tick transmits the disease. We have a vaccine for horses that we need to give to horses that have been infected or are immunocompromised like Cushing's horses. We know what to look for and we know how to treat the disease. So that's a start. What about the future? Well, for the animal, there are some unknowns. In dogs, studies have shown that 43% may develop kidney disease later in life. So we will have to see how horses are affected later in their life. Lyme disease affects the entire horse, and we just don't know all the long-term effects. Sadly, well, not sadly, life is about changing and adapting to new information, acting on what we know and improving our actions in the future with new knowledge. Everything I said today in 5 years may have changed in 5 days. Vet medicine in general may be recommending different things, and I may be recommending different things as new information comes my way. And remember, when we get it all figured out, in 5 years, that shifty spirochete will adapt and change, and we will have to adapt and change with it to stay ahead. Nothing I said here is gospel truth, but is just where one outdoor vet is in his treatment and understanding of equine Lyme disease. I'm Dr. Nathan. Thanks for listening. I hope our discussions are valuable to you and aid in giving perspective. If you want to contact us, please reach out to theveterinarypodcast@gmail.com. You can find a complete list of the podcast episodes on SoundCloud. If you find this information helpful and want more content, please join our Patreon, patreon.com/theveterinarypodcast. And don't forget to follow our Facebook page, facebook.com/theveterinarypodcast. As always, thanks for listening, and I hope this information is helpful to you. If you do find it helpful, please like it, share it, so other people may find it helpful as well.